Hey guys, how's it going? My name is Joseph Fordham and this is NPLH In Conversation With, the football podcast that isn't about football, brought to you by NPLH Studio. NPLH is more than a podcast. Once you've hit the follow button, visit nplhmag.com to enjoy online reads, subscribe to our newsletter and browse our collection of magazines, prints and apparel. On to the show. Aside from being an incredibly handsome man, Tariq Pertu is CEO and co-founder of NYC Football, the co-ed league formed for fun back in 2010. 14 years on, Footy has not only consolidated itself in the city, but has grown into the largest amateur league in the United States, whilst only existing inside the boundaries of the Big Apple. For now at least. Tariq discusses the off-pitch battles that come with running the league, the cost to not only his own experience of the competition, but his health, how he finds balance, sometimes anyway, and the motivating factors that keep him going. Spoiler alert, it's not money. How's that for sound? You got me there, yeah?
You're actually much better than you were before, yeah.
Oh, wicked. Okay. How you doing, mate? Let's start again. Great to see you anyway.
Yeah, great to see you as well. No, doing okay.
So some new merch. New merch by the looks of it over here. What's this? You got the Paloma. Is this your own NYC brand?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I figured I'd wear this so since it was so topical. But we, you know, we had been sponsored by Puma for a number of years. And then the past 2 years, we were sponsored by, I think you call it Umbro. We say Umbro out here. I don't know how y'all say it out in the UK.
I say Umbro, but it could be a wannabe American in me, maybe.
Oh, you say Umbro, okay. Maybe it's the Americans that say Umbro, I don't know. But we, we were with them for a few years and it was a really good sponsorship. I mean, basically we were getting the jerseys at a really good price. And basically we accepted them, I suppose, as the official provider of our jerseys. They give us all of our other kind of equipment for free, all the balls. They send a bunch of shin guards, you know, shoes, swag, you know, products, if you will, equipping the referees with, you know, with Umbro things as well. It was a great partnership. It's a good brand. It brought a lot of memories back for us as kids. We played in those checkerboard shorts, which were sort of iconic in the US back in the 80s and 90s. So, but we saw an opportunity to produce our own jerseys. We had a couple of connections in the sort of manufacturing world through soccer. And so we were able to get a really quick, I'd say education on how to manufacture our own product, because that's sort of the intimidation factor there is, gosh, I don't know, I don't want to deal with factories, blah, blah, blah. So long story short, it was actually through a really good, well, I can't say he's a really good friend of mine. He's a friend of mine. The only reason we're not really good friends, we haven't seen each other in about 20 years, but we were close when we were in college. Both two of us are Egyptian, but then he went to a different school and I didn't see him for a long time. We reconnected and he's been in the soccer space for a long time. Connected me to a fella out in Egypt. We're both Egyptian. I heard Egypt was producing the ball for the next FIFA World Cup. And I said, oh, can you connect me? This fella said, I want to connect you with someone else. So we connected me with this wonderful team. They develop a sportswear brand out of the Middle East called Tempo. And Tempo is on a few of the teams in the Saudi Premier League, as an example, or Saudi League, if it's Premier League. And I believe their ball is used in the Saudi League as well. So connected with him and he says, look, if you do your jerseys with me, you know, we'll get you these balls, you know, as part of it. So we developed our own brand called Paloma, which is just a play on our own obsession with pigeons. It's been over a year in the making. I was living in Portugal at the time when we started the process of developing Paloma as a brand. And that was, I think, the summer of 22. So right after you and I connected, I had just cut my hair. I cut my hair that February. But yeah, this is kind of the boring bits, but for anyone out there that might be interested in starting their own thing, connected with this fella. We were going to do our jerseys through a different manufacturer. And he said, if you do your jerseys through me, I'll get you these balls basically for nothing. And so you can see the ball right up here, kind of. That's the ball. So we customized soccer balls and we created this brand called Paloma and we ordered, you know, over 30,000 jerseys. And and they landed like 2 days before season kickoff, and so we had, I don't know how many hundreds and hundreds of boxes like landed in our warehouse, and we were just trying to frantically get everything sorted because there was the delays and, you know, and boat shipping, as you know, as a result of the war. So things were backed up, but here we are. We've got our Paloma kits, the shirt, which you can kind of make out like a little bit of a design coming through it.
Yeah. Yeah. What's that? Like a sublimation?
I'll lift this up so you can see the bottom, which is a city. It's a sublimated print of the city skyline and then these pigeons, and it's done by a pretty highly regarded Brooklyn artist named Duke Riley. He owns a very popular tattoo parlor in Greenpoint, Brooklyn, and he's a huge pigeon fanatic. He's got his artwork includes pigeons all the time. He even does like live pigeon installations. So I pinged him and hoping he'd even get back to me. And he did. And I said, you know, would you design our jerseys? And so he did. And he also designed the ball. Later on, I can grab it and show you. But the ball and the jerseys have this Brooklyn designer on them. And we did a launch party on Friday last week for the jerseys. We did a fashion show. We had everyone come out in all the different colors. And it was just a good time. This is a big, big milestone for us to now start manufacturing our own jerseys through this new brand we've created called Paloma. We were able to get their costs down significantly. And when you think about ordering 30,000 jerseys, if you save even a dollar, you're saving a lot of money. So yeah. By cutting out that process, even though we were getting a deal with Umbro and before that Puma, we were able to bring the cost down quite a bit. And you know, for a high touch service business like Footy, I mean, you got to squeeze your margins. So that's what allows us to really go and hire more people and continue to grow. So anyway, that's the long story of how we got to Paloma. If at any point you can cut that into something useful, great. But figured I would share that narrative with you.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. It's really interesting. It's the last time we spoke, you were going through another period of growth coming out of the pandemic in terms of signups. But this is growth in a different form entirely. This is, I guess, like closing the circle on the brand in many ways. Right.
Yeah, very much so. I think, you know, it's interesting. This is such an interesting business. It's actually the most complex business I've ever been a part of. And for anyone listening, I did work in a corporate job right out of college for 4 years. And then, but in around 2006, I started my first company, and I've run a few companies. Nothing as complex as a recreational soccer league, really, genuinely. I mean, there's just so many points of failure that you have to account for. And for example, does the ref show up? Does the ref show up late? Are the balls, did the ref forget the balls? Did they forget the cones? Are the goals broken when you show up? Did someone steal the nets overnight? Is the gate locked? Did the parks double book the field? You know, there's like just so many points of failure. And we have, you know, somewhere between 35 and 40 games happening every single day. So lots of points of failure. And so just creating departments within the business that the field operations department, referee operations department, league operations department, creating all these separate departments that can help make sure that everything goes smooth and the player experience is flawless is difficult. And managing that through a lot of growth was very difficult. So when I had spoken to you last time, we had come out of COVID and saw like a pretty aggressive growth trajectory. And at the time, I was pretty much the only person working full time. I had my two business partners. One was not really involved. He's got a very iconic hardware store. His family's been running in Brooklyn for 70 years. He, you know, that's take up all his time. My other founder was working at a record label, managing a very popular band. And so I was sort of doing it myself. It's fine. Not a big deal. I have a little bit of help here and there. But then when the growth happened, it was really overwhelming. I mean, I had to go to a heart doctor because I literally thought I was dying. I was working nonstop, no sleep, heart was doing all sorts of weird things, trying to triage the customer success channels, trying to get enough reps to actually field, trying to get permits to field all the demand. And because for me, it's like, you know, I'm not gonna complain too much about it, but I saw this as a big opportunity. Don't fuck this up. There's a lot of demand right now for what you're offering. If I just tell everybody, sorry, I can't handle it, then you're missing out on this opportunity, right? I mean, there's that famous Churchill quote you all probably heard. It's overused, I'm sure, but you know, there's nothing like nothing like a crisis, like something about there's no better time to take advantage of something than during a, don't let a good crisis go to waste. I'm sorry for anybody that was waiting for you to say it.
It took me a while to catch up. I did it. Yeah, absolutely.
Don't let a good crisis go to waste. And so, you know, I was like, I got to figure out how to, you know, sink or swim moment, really. And since, you know, flash forward, now the team, there's 12 full-time people and 60 or 70 contractors. You know, the thing just exploded and just hired like crazy to try to keep it up. And then just kind of now in this moment, meaning like even this week, I feel like we're just really starting to get a grip of what it means to run a business of this scale. And now the focus is, how do we take it out of New York? How do we grow in different markets and such? But yeah, it grew a ton. I mean, I think when I had spoke, so we had hit this record number of teams in the spring of 2020, right when things were kind of hitting the fan with COVID. And so we thought it would take a couple of years to really come back. But in the spring of 2021, we like exceeded that number. And that was what was wild. I was like, holy cow, we've already beaten our record the first kind of season out of COVID. You could even, and, you know, the vaccines hadn't come out yet and all that crap. But so people were still afraid, if you will. But that was a signal. It's like, if people are playing right now in, amidst this quote pandemic, and there's still distancing and all this crap going on, and we already beat our previous record, then something's up. Flash forward now, that was the spring of 2021. Spring of 2024, 3 years later, we're five times as large as we were that period. So we had hit this massive record milestone in the spring of 2021, and now we're five times larger than we were at that moment. And that's just been what the growth has been in this league. And it's all been New York. That's the craziest bit. It's like, I think there's a lot of New Yorkers that didn't realize this was a thing they could do.
Wow, yeah, and you're at the forefront of it. It's crazy to think back, like wind it back X amount of years, when it was just you guys chatting and looking for a bit more of a structured permanent team to play for during the week.
Exactly, a bit more, right.
Yeah. And
yeah, you remember that.
And now here you are.
That's what came out of it. Yeah, we were a so there's terminology they use in the US. I don't think it's used as widely elsewhere. It's called free agency. Maybe they use it. But in the rec leagues, if you sign on as a free agent, you're basically registering as an individual and hoping that the league will put you on a team with a bunch of other people. A lot of leagues don't do free agency because it's a headache. You got to especially us, where our entire league is mixed. So it's men, women, it's co-ed, it's mixed gender, whatever you want to call it. And so we have to make sure there's a minimum number of female players on the team as well. So we have to assemble all these teams and then introduce them to each other and then assign a captain and then make sure that they communicate with each other. It's a lot of work, so a lot of leagues are like not doing it. You want to play, you sign up as a full team. Well, we met on a free agent team years ago before we started footy, and we were playing soccer in the city under a league called Urban Soccer. And they're still going. That's like the first ever league in New York, run by just a really great dude named Jamie. And we were playing in his league. We met on a free agent team. We became great friends, and it was out of that free agent team. We said, hey, should we run a league that's a little bit more in our vision, real jerseys, you know, take team photos that are fun, you know, track stats, that sort of thing. And they're like, yeah, let's do it. And then the benefit for us is, oh, we'll get to play for free. And that was 2011. And we got our first permit in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. And it was a shit show. It was 7-7. We played on regulation goals. The score lines are out of control. We really didn't know what we were doing. Flash forward, you know, from that moment. And now NYC Footy is the largest adult, the largest amateur soccer league in the entire country. It operates just out of New York. It's crazy.
Wow. Do you sit and reflect on that particular stat?
I'll say this. I talk about it too much and I don't reflect on it nearly enough. I think I'm always in, you know, I'm always in like supersonic mode with, oh my God, soccer's growing at such a pace in this country right now. You know, and Joe, when you come here, when you'll just feel it. It's like, you know, the day Messi landed in Miami, we had so many calls from partners trying to partner with us. They're like, uh-oh, Messi's here. We got to associate ourselves with soccer somehow. And, you know, the World Cup's coming in 2 years. That's a massive milestone for us. We have to be ready for that moment. The final's going to be in New York, right? We're the biggest, like, and when you think of soccer in New York, of course, you think of the big brands, NYCFC and Red Bull, but the big, you know, MLS brands, but you really can't penetrate soccer in New York without coming through footy in some respect. So if the finals here, we know that's a big opportunity for us. So that's a long way of saying is like, I don't reflect because I almost feel like there's no time to. It's like, how do I take this great interesting thing. We started for fun and now we're the biggest league in the country. How do I use that to my advantage to grow the league, to get more partners in? So I talk about it a lot for those purposes. Hey, we're the biggest amateur league in the country. You know, we've got all these players in New York. You know, you should be a brand. You should be partnering with us. You should be doing things with us. You know, but I hope before I die, which could be any day now at the rate we're working at, we'll see, that I do have time to seriously reflect at what, you know, at what this means and what it's become. You know, for us individually, it's a great professional privilege, but how many lives has it actually impacted? You know, we just got, I got a message in my inbox on Monday of this week from a woman who met a gentleman in our league, and their last name is Simpson, and they moved to Massachusetts together and now they're getting married. And so she said, can you mail us two blue jerseys, because that's the team we played on when we met, and print the Simpsons on it, and we're going to basically wear it during the wedding. So we're in the process of like shipping that to them, you know. And I think that when you hear one isolated narrative like that, then all the other shit doesn't really even, it doesn't matter as much. It's that one story that's like, ah, I'm glad I have this job. I'm glad this is my job. I'm glad this thing I did impacted people. And one thing I think about a lot, and I think you, you know, the line of business you're in is similar, is the line of business we're in, there's not much negative that we're bringing. There's a lot of businesses where it's kind of net positive. You could argue like Instagram. It's got a ton of negative shit. Maybe it's net positive. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's net negative. You have manufacturing. It's kind of net positive, right? Because there's some awful impact to that manufacturing process. Save the fact that now we make our own jerseys, and that process I'm sure has negative components of it and a few other things. It's mostly all positive. You're just creating a place for people to play soccer and meet each other. There's not a lot of people that have a negative experience there as a result of being able to benefit from the positive side of it. Like there's not much of a, like, oh, I gotta accept this negative to gain this positive. I love being in that space a bit. My previous instance wasn't really like that. You know, I was in the HR world where we were trying to like convince people to work at these companies, which were for the most part just full hot air. And it just felt like there's a lot of negative to that trade-off to give somebody a positive offering. Here it just feels, it feels all positive, right? It's great, great feeling being.
And the impact that you mentioned there, it does go beyond the teams that are participating each week. I know the example of the Simpsons is specific to the league and the impact that you have on the players during those games, but it's what the players gain from that hour or whatever it is each week, and then take out into their personal lives and their work lives and whatever, the, you know, the feel good factor that they're getting from it, the self confidence, the self fulfillment, whatever it is, and they're paying that into other aspects of their life, and people are benefiting from an improved version of each individual that's participating, you know. So you can't really ever measure the impact that the game is having.
Not at all. I mean, that, I love that you shared that insight, because that is true. We are, you know, extremely sentient. You know, we, one input leads to a different output, right? Yeah, you go to the field and it's something you really look forward to, and you get this sort of physical wellness release and this mental wellness, you know, benefit. You're with your friends, stress is being released, you go to the pub afterwards. How does that input lead? You're right. Like the output that comes from that is a happier person, a more empathetic person, more giving person. The others, you know, the local bars and restaurants that see all these players pour in and, you know, develop this great relationship with, you know, with that particular location or business. That's all, that stuff is special, you know, but it isn't all good. You know, there's like this internal conflict in the city too of, there's actually, believe it or not, there's a negative perception about adult leagues in New York at the political level. And so we're actually now in the process of working with some consultants to help change that narrative. I think there's this weird dynamic of like adult versus youth. No one created it. Politicians created that. Not, there's not a single adult league that's like, let's take from youth or human being. But politicians created this narrative that anytime an adult league is on a field, it's the time a youth could be on that field. And so adults are taken from youth. And that is just without context, people are like, yeah, that makes sense. Out with, yeah. You know, out with these
the
older people.
The headline is easy to grab attention, right? Yeah.
Very easy to grab that attention. But when you actually contextualize and you really dig in, that is not at all the case. It is not. And then the more you facilitate this sort of sense of community that gets created because adults coming together and doing things, that obviously trickles down to youth and what, you know, what adults can do at that level. So that's one of our biggest challenges, is trying to work with the city to help them understand that they're not seeing that lens properly.
I think when politicians get involved and I guess offer sound bites like that, it's worth zooming out and looking at what else they're trying to distract you from, right? Make a fuss out of something that isn't a problem over here, mm-hmm. because over here we've got something we don't want you to know about, or we want to, you know, slip under the radar in column 4 of page 12.
That's right.
Or whatever, you know, it's pretty transparent, but it leaves you with a mess to clear up.
And that's probably the same in the UK. I mean, I think Morgan Freeman's got some great quote of saying, like, you know, one of the biggest mistakes you can make is think that other people think like you. And that's a mistake we all make. It's like, well, surely they wouldn't do that, or surely they wouldn't see that. I'm probably getting all these quotes wrong, by the way. I don't know. Just like, I hear them and I think that's who they're associated to. But the politicians are a different breed of human. For the most part, there are always exceptions to that. There's definitely politicians that are just like beating their head against a desk saying, I'm going to stay in this industry and I'm going to fight until the death to change it. But by and large, it attracts a type of person that is just, in my opinion, doing kind of exactly what you said. How can we bury the lead somewhere else and then sneak in this thing that's going to help the interests of some corporate entity that's benefiting me personally? And that narrative is just swimming. It's a cesspool of that. You know, I've read some books on Theodore Roosevelt, who's an inspiring human in my, you know, if people find inspiration from other humans, mine, he's one of them. And he entered politics at a similar time that we're experiencing now in politics, just divisiveness on both sides. Just a junkyard dog mentality of operating and creating policy. And his family, which was very well-known, well-recognized family in New York, was like, you're not entering politics. You're not going to swim in that cesspool. And he's like, dude, come hell or high water, I'm going to change this. And that dude, I mean, he did. He came in and just did it. And it took a long time, but he really made an impact. And it changed a little bit of the culture, the type of people that are drawn into politics. And then we snapped back. You know, we really have. And it's at every level. You know, it's at every level. You know, right now, New York's in rough shape with leadership. Country's in rough shape with leadership. My opinion, of course. But I think it's shared because I've genuinely haven't heard a single person say, man, we got great leaders in this country and we're killing it right now. Like, I've never heard a single human being say that in God knows how long.
I think it's only Sweden that ever say that.
It might only be Sweden. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly. Credit to them.
What's your reaction when something else like that lands on your plate? As if you haven't got enough on it already, especially as you've gone through this unparalleled growth in even the 18 months since we last spoke. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. Okay, it's another thing. And you mentioned earlier on the stress impact that has on you. I'm getting the gist that maybe you don't pick your battles, you take them all on. You're determined to take them all on.
Yeah, I think we take on most of the battles, yeah. We sort of, when they hit us, I think we give a... Here's the thing. Yes, we take on all the battles, but we do try to place our strength in certain battles at that moment. Because you sort of have no choice but to pick loads of different battles. You know, we have to get more women in the league. You know, that's a battle that we're trying to, you know, work with right now. We need to make sure that minimize forfeits, because the one thing about recreational leagues is people are paying for it. It's not the other way around. So if there's a forfeit, they actually lose real value in the product. I'm there to play. That's another, you know, challenge. And then you've got competitive threats, right? You've got other leagues that are in, and getting a permit is so hard. There's so much competition to land a permit. And we actually, despite being the size and scale that we are, we don't have the best permits. Like, the best permits are like riddled across so many other leagues. The best permits, by the way, are weeknight after work. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, 6 p.m. to 10. That window is the best. We have like two of those. But because of the quality of the operation we've created, people are willing to play at non-peak times to play in NYC footy versus other leagues. And we've seen that as an example. Anyway, competitive threats dealing with one of the ugly things about like this type of cutthroat competitiveness in the adult world is they'll make phone calls to the parks department and say that, oh, NYC footy's misusing their permit. No basis for it. But the parks office tells me all the time that leagues are calling and complaining. It's like, we know we're probably the only league that is fully visible with everything we do. Every minute we're on a field, every schedule. A lot of leagues, as an example, they'll lock up their schedules behind a paywall gate. So the parks department can't audit it because they're hiding stuff. Like, we got nothing to hide, as an example. We have to keep fighting that. We have to keep reinforcing that we are the good guys, despite what you hear out there, you know, and how do we capture narratives? So depending on the fight, we will move our pawns, if you will, into certain directions. So when trying to manage all these things for the past couple of years, the major challenge that we were putting most of our energy in was building operational processes across the different departments so that we weren't dying. So we launched like the league operations department, reinforced it, focused on that, focused on the field operations department, and most recently the referee operations department, hiring someone, home in on that, train and develop the referees. Because for a while, a challenge, and it still is referees aren't good enough, you know? And by not being good enough, I mean, they don't care enough, right? They're like, oh, this is easy enough. I'll stand on the sideline and just blow my whistle. I don't know the rule. I don't know all the rules. Who cares? And we just had to say, sorry, that's not a fight that we're going to put a lot of energy in right now. And that sounds crazy to a listener. How could you not prioritize that? And here's why. All the leagues have the same standard. So we weren't losing competitively on the referees at that time. So we had to address our energy to the other battles where you could lose players on. You're not going to lose players for referees because all the leagues struggle with that. Once we're able to get those things settled, now we take that stage of, okay, now we're going to be the best league when it comes to referees. We're the best league in these other areas. We focused on that. But now we're going to train, develop our referees, go watch them during games. Now we're building an app that's going to be released hopefully next week. We're waiting on Apple. Apple keeps rejecting certain things. They need to see different things in the app where players are going to be able to log their experience after a game. Did the ref show up on time? Did the ref hustle to get the field set up? Did the ref understand the rules? And we're not going to, you know, and this is where we start getting pattern recognition. If the same ref is getting pinged 3-4 times from different captains saying there's an issue, now we can start to really monitor refs because we can't have people at the field all the time. So, but that's where we move the pawns to the referee upside. And that's what, you know, somewhat recently we focused on. Now, what I'm working on, as I've been able to get out of the weeds a bit, is the image side of things. How do we help change the image, not just for footy, by the way, the image for all adult leagues, even though we're hyper competitive with them? I want all adult leagues to share in that narrative that we are offering not just a service, a critical service to the people of this city, which is a physical and mental outlet, a way to socialize with people in a world that's socializing less, a way to be physically active outdoors when that's becoming more and more challenging, as an example, and but COVID sort of killed a lot of that, and a way to create organized, safe, and structured play. Because if you just pickup doesn't do that for people, because you might show up at a field to play pickup and no one's there to play, or you might show up and the game is full and you wait forever, or you show up, you get a game and there's a fist fight. So how do you have structured, organized, safe play for adults, as an example? And so we've hired a group that's going to help us with that. They've worked with local politicians in the city, for years. They've got a great reputation, and they're going to help us tell our story to loads of different council members that just have never even heard it, because there's never been an organized adult initiative to share their narrative. Now there's going to be one, and we're hiring this company to help give us airtime to share with them. So that, you know, again, every question you have, I apologize for the listeners. I always have such a painfully long-winded answer, but that, you know, that for me, that's really important now, is we need to go to these council members and say, hey, while you, anytime like someone comes to you and says, hey, a dad and his child want to play on that field and there's an adult group playing on it. And then you go and you call the parks department and say, you need to give time for this dad and his kid. You need to now understand the consequences of that trade-off. Because now you're displacing 400 players that have a family, that have kids, that are active in their community, that now don't have the outlet that they could have had, because we're making this uninformed trade-off. And so that's going to be a really important battle that we're now moving our pawns toward. Me personally, it's like we're moving our pawns in that direction. We're going to fight. We're going to still be fighting on all fronts, but we're focusing the larger part of our effort there.
First of all, I appreciate the in-depth answers because good, that's why people are listening. The less I'm speaking, the more interested they are.
Not here. If it was in the US, all they want to hear is that accent of yours, I promise.
I should have moved to another country because nobody likes this accent here. Instantly identifiable as working class East London borders.
So no charming to me, honestly. It's beautifully charming.
No one's interested in it, but I'll take that. You mentioned, well, there's a few things I'd like to pick up on, but I'll start with the most recent there, the community factor you just mentioned. And so what Footy is doing, what you guys are doing, is offering service, acts of service. And I appreciate it as a business, so there's payback for that, but ultimately it's something that you've started through love that has evolved. So it's an act of service, it's providing community and belonging and all of this kind of stuff. How important were those factors to you before Footy? Or has Footy kind of developed those within you over the time since it's formed? Like, have you learned the value of those things through it, or you had those within you that you wanted to share with others, if that makes sense?
Makes perfect sense. One of the interesting things about getting older is you're able to start putting words to the feelings that you have as a child or in your young adulthood. And so what I mean by that is, I think it was always in me to be community centric and focused, because I was throwing house parties without alcohol when I was like 10 at my mom's house. And then maybe a little bit with alcohol as I got older. And then I was a social chair of my fraternity in college. And then I created a sports league at UVA for the undergrad business school. So I've always had this compass of community, but I didn't know. I didn't have words to say, oh, I love community. I never went to bed at night being like, I gotta strengthen this community. I need to do whatever it takes to bring people together and find their future best friend, their future lover, if you will, their partner, roommate. None of that. And it was never putting words to that. But as you get older, now that I'm in my 40s, now you do put words to it. Now you're like, yeah, I understand the impact of the work I'm doing. I can label it, whether that's a good or bad thing, as being community, you know, fostering community, growing community. And now I've created a North Star that is labeled, and we're going to work now faster and more furiously towards that direction. So long and short of it is, I think I've always had it in me as a compass. I'm a very social person. I've never lived ever by myself. I lived at home. Then I had roommates throughout all 4 years of college. Then I had roommates coming out of college. Then I met my wife and moved in with her. And now we live together and have a family of four. I've never lived by myself. So being in and around people is just, I'm so ingrained in me as an individual. And that's every individual has certain things ingrained in them. And I think that compass pushed me in this direction without me thinking, because, you know, you go to college now and you ask people, what do you want to do? And they're like, I want to work on, you know, I really want to work on, you know, the environment, or I want to stop global warming. You know, they're already labeling things, but is your compass telling you that? Or is that just what's trending right now and you feel like an obligation to give yourself to that? You know, to me, it was like the compass was driving everything. And I didn't even know it was just taking me in all these directions. You know, and we do these tournaments. I love doing tournaments. We do the biggest tournament in New York every year called the Governor's Cup. We do this upstate tournament in New York where 500 people from the city come up 3 hours upstate. And they rent houses, and we do a one day tournament on, you know, on real grass up in the mountains of the Catskills. We're doing a tournament, a street tournament at this mega mall called the American Dream Mall in New Jersey, which sits right next to the MetLife Stadium where the World Cup final is going to be. in July. And the, you know, tournaments are another just really great high impact point of just everyone coming together and having like a special moment. So, yep, I think now I do know community is really important. Bringing people together, very important. I think the one trade-off there, and I shared this with someone at our launch party, was sometimes I wish I was just a player in this league and not the person responsible for everybody's joy. Because that is the big trade-off sometimes, I think, of entrepreneurs. You hear this all the time when you listen to some of these entrepreneurial podcasts, like How I Built This. You hear that in the voice of these entrepreneurs. It's like the trade-off is rough sometimes because you can't participate. You create this thing because you know the joy it can bring to people, but you can't experience that joy the way you have it. You've created it. You can't experience the joy the way it was intended to be experienced because you're the one responsible for making sure things go well. And so there are so many times where I'm like, I wish I was just a player in the league that I created and not the person that actually.
You're the glue, essentially. And you always have been the glue. You are also like the community equivalent of a photographer who's sacrificing the present moment to live life through a lens, essentially.
Well said. I mean, you really put these into words in such a powerful way. That's a really powerful way of looking at it. Yeah, you're sacrificing your present state to give other people an opportunity to experience the joy of that present state that you're creating.
How do you plug back in? I mean, you mentioned you've always been around people and now you're obviously in a family of four. How do you recharge? You've got to be switched on nonstop with footy. Then you go home and you're a husband and a father.
Yeah.
Where's the downtime to keep the scales evenly balanced? Or is that it's why you ended balanced. Up in a position where your heart is kind of
exactly. Flickering? Yeah, I mean, it is admittedly imbalanced right now and has been for a bit. I've gotten my weekends back mostly, which has been very helpful. We've done a pretty good job of catching up so that the weekends are back and doing things with the fam. You know, we have a relatively young one. We've got a 15-month-old as well as our 9-year-old. And she's sometimes you get that recharge through your children, through your family, you know, even though it might be work. I do also feel a recharge while working sometimes. Like when we do creative brainstorming and stuff, I actually get a little bit of an injection of energy when we start talking about, like new creative ideas and such. So I get it there, but I think the general, like, for instance, we have a farm upstate New York. And when we go up there, then I feel the recharge. Like then I'm actually in an environment that allows me to absorb nature. There's a stream that runs through it. So I always love just kind of sitting and staring at that, taking a walk outside in the yard and by the barn and everything. And that to me, there's no active animals in it, but just the experience. That is a recharge moment for sure. And I always feel way less stressed when I'm up there. So that's one factor is how do we get upstate more often and just be more connected to nature. Because even though we're doing this, so this goes back to a little bit what you're saying, but when you're bringing people together in this community, whatever, I think what people don't understand when you run a rec soccer league, or what they have no reason to even, that thought didn't come in their head, but if someone were to say, oh, you run a rec soccer league, people I think you're always on the field, always out there doing stuff. It's like 99% of my work is sitting in this godforsaken chair behind this godforsaken machine, staring into a screen that's like making my brain burn slowly for an absurd amount of hours a day. And that's my reality. And so it's not the kind of fun stuff I'd say of being out there and being out about and moving your legs and being active. So anyway, again, long-winded way of saying I'm not balanced right now. I don't know really how to be quite honest. It's something that I think I need to move my pawns, if you will, in that direction and say, okay, we're going to really be committed here. Of finding a way to make sure that I'm not doing this, living this unhealthy professional lifestyle where I'm not as connected to nature and I'm not active with my body and, you know, doing the things that, you know, required for a healthy lifestyle.
Well, the fact that you spend so much time chained to that desk doubles the appreciation I've got for you spending the time chatting with me on this.
Well, this is energizing for me, honestly. You had mentioned energizing. Like for me, just to be able to sit and talk about this stuff with another interesting individual, is that is relaxing for me. It really is. You know, I'm sitting back in a chair, I'm not typing, you know, I'm chatting with you. I would do it every day if there's an opportunity for it.
Well, episode 2 coming up. Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Sticking with family just briefly, I'd like to just, I guess, call on your expertise and experience a little bit in terms of motivation, incentive, whatever you want to call it. So you're a father of 2. It sounds like a bit of an age gap you got there as well. So you're going through it all again after you probably thought you'd clocked off. So a month ago now, stepped away from full-time employment to embrace a new chapter and just see what I could carve, what kind of path I could carve for myself out there in the wild. And then a week later, I learned that I'd be a dad for the first time.
I just got goosebumps. That's beautiful.
You know, the timing on the surface is off, but the universe is doing its thing. So that's fine.
Absolutely.
At 41, first time father at 41. Well, 41 this summer. Fast forward a few more weeks and I learned that it's 2.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So all of a sudden, I guess the period of grace that I'd planned for myself to feel my way through this has been, well, not so much shortened, but removed. The privilege is gone. There's now a hard line in the sand where life will change. And there are two new beings that are going to be relying on me for all kinds of support.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a bit of a removal for me because I guess I've just started to discover myself a lot more over the past few years after coming out of a marriage and a very difficult time with my mental health. Life has changed dramatically with new partner, all the stuff, new town, and now this. So there's a lot of uncharted territory for me. And part of that is, I think, consistent grind. I find it in sprints, but never any kind of there's never any real endurance to it. And I think that's just a trait that I've carried through life. So yeah, in your experience, I guess this ties in nicely. You've got a 9-year-old and that ties in with what Footy is 13 years old. So you would have experienced fatherhood early doors in that journey.
Mm.
Did that change your perspective and approach to you running this as a business? Do you think it would have been as big as it is now had you not had the incentive, I guess, to provide?
Well, you're a poet. You should know that. I don't know if anyone's ever told you that. You've got real magic in your words. But
episode 49, mate. I'm the hamstrings are loosened up at this point. I'm gliding up and down the wing.
I got to congratulate you. I always wanted twins, for what it's worth. Congratulations. Godspeed and you know, lots of love and support. I got a lot of controversial parenting advice, but it's mostly around pharmaceutical and medical intrusion into the lives of families. If you sort of just go with the general thesis of what's accepted, then you'll learn that the United States is like got the highest infant mortality rate of any first world country by a country mile. And everyone's just like, yeah, keep doing exactly what you're keep doing the thing exactly like you've been doing because we're so programmed to listen to it. So I just went on again, I moved my pawns in that direction when I knew my kid was being born. I just went on a deep dive studying everything, different countries, how they do everything from how they give birth to vaccinations, all that stuff. And came up with a very strategic custom plan for my family as a result of all that stuff. So, and I'm not afraid to share it because sometimes I think it's like life or death stuff. But anyway, well, that's no one wants to get on this podcast. But I'll say this much.
It's one for the email thread. I'll take it.
Yeah, and I'll give it unsolicited. Unsolicited. It's one of the areas of unsolicited advice I think I push out there, because I feel like so much of what I've studied and done is, needs to be shared a little bit. But anyway, when I had Kalila, the first thing, and this might speak a little bit to mental health, doesn't the need to maintain positive, healthy mental wellness doesn't go away, but it does change a bit. Like one of the first things I felt, and I should say that this is me saying that everyone's going to think the way I think. So let me just say how I thought about it, is for the first time in my life, I cared a whole lot less about my physical and mental longevity. And it was like, I got to make sure that thing. And that's just, I think that's kind of natural. It's like, oh, okay. You know, every day when you come home before you have kids, you're probably trying to think about what joy can you find from coming home? Am I going to watch a cool movie tonight? Are we going to go have a nice dinner together? Am I going to meet my missus for something? When you have a child, it's the same thing every day. I'm going to come see my child. I'm going to come to my child. My child's home. My child's home. My child's home. Like that joy is just boom. It just changes. Then when I had shared that once, a woman who I really respect, the mother of a friend of mine, said, "Don't forget your wife in all this. Like you're going to have kids, and your focus is going to be there, but don't forget the importance of that relationship. And the children benefit by seeing that important relationship." And I'm still far from being perfect there. Let me just share that bit. It's like advice received, but not necessarily taken kind of thing. But that was really good advice. And here's another interesting fact, again, specifically about me, and is that I never worried about money, even when I didn't have any of it. And let me tell you, I had none of it for a long time. My first 3 years as an entrepreneur, I made $18,000, $20,000, $22,000. That was my annual salary for 3 years, my first 3 years as an entrepreneur. And I was just living in a cheap ass apartment, and I was still figuring out how to eat organic. And I just made it work, but I never stressed about money. But that is so keen to me, because I'll tell you what, my wife stresses about all the time. And so I never know how much money's in my bank account. I just don't pay attention to it. So that didn't move too much when I had a kid. I wasn't suddenly thinking, oh my God, I got to go make more money for my kid, because I never worried about money anyway. I actually think that in a different world where we don't live in this one, where you kind of have to make money, I think not having money is a place of where you can really tap into serious happiness, you know, because you let all the things go. You don't have to worry about the things. You're free. I mean, one of my closest friends is living in this world that way. He lives out of his van. He is totally free. He showers. He has his gym membership. It's where he showers. That's where he gets his physical activity. He just came off of this like Appalachian Trail hike that he does all these hikes. He's in his later 40s. And he says, everyone says the same thing to him. I envy your freedom. I envy your freedom. So there is that. And I think I always know that if I did lose everything, the worst case is that I'm free. You know, if I lose it all, I'm free. And I think that kind of is always sitting in the back of my head, and why I don't worry so much, and maybe why I'm also a little bit of a risk taker. I will say this, though. The second I started making money, which wasn't that long ago, honestly, it's basically when I sold my tech company in 2021. That was like the very first time where I was like, I'm actually catching up to my friends that I graduated with that has been 20 years in like a professional job. That's when I started stressing about money a little bit more. And then the second kid came, and then I started thinking, oh, okay, now we need to save for a house. And that's what's so weird about all this. It's like, it's only really when the money came a little bit more, and I'm by no means swimming in it, but when I finally was like relieved of, you know, that sort of liminal space of like, I'm not struggling, but I'm not saving anything, which a lot of people live in. It's like, it's just, I'm one in, out, but I'm fine. I'm eating well and blah, blah, blah. I still take vacation every so often. Now that I am saving, let's just say that, now I think more about the saving part. Now I'm thinking more about, oh, if I do die, I got to leave something for the kids. I really wish that thought never entered my brain, although there's people listening that are like, no, that's the responsible way to think. But there's just so much freedom in that place my brain used to be that I wish my daughter would have. My daughters would have is that freedom of like, I can worry about it. Things are going to be okay. I hustle enough, and I'll figure out how things work. But when the second one came, yeah, I think that's when I started thinking, okay, I got to leave something for these kids. you know, that'd be maybe a little bit less risky. I gotta save more money. I gotta make more money so I can save more. And then if I do go, you know, plus the sacrifice that my wife has made, she's a, you know, she basically gave up her career. An outstanding graphic designer. She's a packaging designer. Now she's, you know, she's taken this opportunity to go into a new career with Ayurveda, Ayurvedic medicine. So she's building that out slowly. But, you know, if I were to kick the bucket tomorrow, that's a problem. You know, that's a problem because, you know, one person gave up the career and the earnings to, you know, help raise the children. And, you know, and that could put your family in a big pickle. So that goes through my mind. You know, I got life insurance for the first time a few years ago. So look, those things go through your mind. I guess I'm not giving any advice. I'm just sort of telling you what I did. But I think, you know, you're about to have twins. You have said, I'm going to move away from something that maybe wasn't bringing you loads of joy. Because the other great thing about a career is that you can find a career that brings you so much joy that you would never even think of leaving, even if it's not making a lot of money. And that's what footy ended up being for me. It was like, it took 3 years to make our first anything. We didn't care. And partially we didn't care because we all had other projects. But I think you're having twins. You're about to, you know, embark on a totally new life. There's going to be components where you might have to make a sacrifice and, you know, maybe do some projects or take on some clients or work in some ways that you otherwise wouldn't want to. But I would just say my own advice on all of that is don't lose the professional thing that brings you joy. Like, always keep that as your little side thing, even with family. And I see that with everybody, is when people dedicate their whole life to one job that they're not really passionate about, or doesn't really bring them that energy, you know, and then the other half is dedicated to family life, which is great. You want to have that. But you stare at them and you see something's missing. All of them, universally, there's something missing there. And that's why, even if you don't make money, to always hang on to that thing that brings you joy, because you've got, you know, you're toiling with something that gives you purpose. Doesn't have to make money, but you're toiling in something that brings you purpose. You know, never lose that, maybe is my feedback to anyone on the line. I'm not worried about you as a father or anything, because that, you know, there is something deeply biological about our ability to take that on. And you'll see it in your partner as well. Like, you're going to see a side of your partner that's going to be like, holy shit, that intuition is strong. It's another piece of feedback. Don't take too much advice from people about parenting. Maybe just try to ignore all of it. Don't read the books. Your intuition is very powerful. So you're your partner, you'll figure that out.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest surprises so far is how chill I've been about it.
That's great. I love that.
I guess that's just something in us that's kicking in that hasn't needed to be accessed before, right?
I wouldn't even question it, man. You're probably not, but I wouldn't question any of the feelings you're having, any of the feelings your partner's having, even if they come into like conflict. In other words, she's like, why are you so chill? We're about to have a family. You need to not be chill. Your job in that moment is to help her understand, or whoever, like, I'm assuming it's her. I shouldn't just throw it out there, but helping her understand that, like, that's fine. You know, this is how I feel naturally, and I'll support how you feel naturally. And that's like, you know, I made the mistake with the first one of trying to read the books and get the advice. The best advice you can get is like, what happens if your kid's choking? Get that advice. Get that stuff. But the raising, like, people telling you, let your baby, you know, sleep and cry for 16 hours a day. If you don't feel like that feels good, don't do it. That's just terrible advice that someone gave you that doesn't fit the way you want to raise your children. You know, that's one example. That's a controversial one here in the US. But that's, yeah, I think if you're feeling chill, that's awesome. And just don't even question.
Just write that. That was really, really helpful and reassuring answer that feels like a very organic place to wrap it up. But I guess just one more thing. I'm just curious. Just to pull out one more bit from my initial question.
Yeah.
Are those two children what is driving your, I guess, what is revving your engine with footy? Or is that something that's just in you anyway? I know you're an entrepreneur. And you've alluded to the years of treading water somewhat in the early days of that. Were there days where you thought, oh, you know what, I need to step into a bit more security. I'm starting a family and I need to step away from this and find the 9 to 5, even in the early days of NYC footy. Or were you like, no, I can't step away from it. This is who I am. Is that work ethic ingrained basically, or is that learned? And if it's the former, do you think it can be learned?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. For me, I do think it's ingrained, but it's not really fair to say that, because I think once I started on my entrepreneurial journey, I was never going to leave it, no matter what. I knew that that's where I needed to be. I didn't do well in corporate settings. I was always ruffling feathers. You know, just things weren't done my way, but it's my personality, a bit of a control freak. You know, I can be obtuse, and it just didn't fit for me. And so I was always going to be the person that, I think, once I tasted entrepreneurship, which I had not had previously, I knew I was going to sink or swim in that world. And my children would be just fine. If we all packed into a really small apartment, we would do it. If I had to move back to Tennessee, where I grew up as a kid, where you can buy like a really nice house for $150,000 and mortgage it and pay, you know, $800 a month, I would do that if I had to. Like, hey, we're not living in New York City anymore. We're going to live here and do the thing. But I think if a human being loses creative purpose, God, it's like, I don't even mourn over that one soul. I mourn over the earth losing so much purpose in the creative energy people could be giving towards something that they really love, but isn't, because they feel like they have to sacrifice maybe a little bit more than they have to. And that's, again, this is coming maybe from a privileged state, because even though I wasn't raised with money, I was never left wanting. My mom worked really hard, and I also, you know, went to a good school. And from that point on, I only saw up, if you will. But I know that's not the case for everybody. I'll say that when I had the kids, it definitely hones your focus. So when people say, how are you going to be able to do the things with kids? You figure out how to do even more with kids. I think that's something really interesting. Like, I got busier when I had kids. I was able to do more, because you don't even realize you cut a ton of shit out of your life when you have kids, a lot. You're not going to late night events anymore. You're not doing all the things that might take some of your energy away. And you're able to actually hone, you know, your focus a little bit more with children. That was pretty binary. Kid came, more focus. Was able to do more. Because at the time, I remember my business partner being somewhat concerned. Tarek's going to have a kid. We've got this fledgling business. We're kicking off the ground, my other business. Is he not going to be available? Is he not going to be around? Is this going to all be on my shoulders? The opposite happened. It was like, boom, overdrive. And that was a nice reality of it. I'd say you've done such incredibly creative things. You've accomplished some projects that are the envy of, I think, a lot of people, certainly in the media world. And, I think if there's a path you've been stomping on and that's the path that feels right, I would not give that up if family comes. In fact, think about when you're an entrepreneur, you spend a lot of time around your kids, watching what you do. Like my daughter only knows entrepreneurship. She literally has no idea what it must be to work with somebody. Her brain doesn't even work that way, because the osmosis of being around me constantly, she is got the greatest education in entrepreneurship, just because all of that has just been absorbed with her somewhat subliminally over all these years. And I think kids love to see their parents do things that give, that drive them. They love that. They're not thinking my dad is doing something that makes no money, or they're just like, look at my dad working hard at something that he seems to really love, or look at my dad working at something that he seems to know everything about. He knows that all of it. Oh, anyone that needs to know anything about X comes to my dad for that. And it's soccer, let's say. For you, it's soccer and media and, you know, working with brands and clubs and what have you. And not everybody can say that. So leaning into that and, you know, finding, to me, look, it took 10 years before footy really took off. So anyone that's listening, it's like, if you can, you can hang in there. I'm having this conversation with my brother now, who's starting something in Florida with pickleball. It's like, just find the thing that gets your juices flowing and then commit to 10 years of it. And don't get distracted with too many things. And if it's a side hustle for those years, that's also totally fine, by the way. But just give it that, because, you know, you got to, you know, sometimes these things just take a lot of time. There was a lot of times where even a couple, you know, two people that were early in footy not here, one that still here standing, wanted to just kill footy. And that's a distraction, you know. And I was like, not killing it. It's too much fun, too many people. And now it's the biggest league in the country. Imagine we killed that thing. I bet a lot of people kill things a couple of years before it was something big was about to happen. I bet that shit happens all the time. Yeah, if anything, I would have kids as an excuse to keep doing what you love. How about that?
I'll take that. I'll definitely take that.
Let them see you do what you love, you know?
Yeah, that is fantastic food for thought. I appreciate that. And what you've said has actually just thrown up something else I'd like to ask before we go.
Yeah, no worries.
What you just mentioned about people wanting to kill it, it's too much of a distraction, things like this. And you're like, too many people. It's, you know, there's a lot of promise with it. Do you feel the weight of responsibility for what you've built now that there's so many people that it impacts? And as it continues to grow, it's going to leave New York, which seems like an inevitability. Mm-hmm. How does the, does that come with an element of letting go in some way, because you can't be in two places at once? And how do you feel about the prospect of having to loosen the grip on it slightly as it does go cross city or and beyond?
Yeah, I struggle with letting go, you know, especially as a control personality. I had a friend of mine, a psychologist, and he developed this really interesting study that helps you understand every human has like, there's like you have like one primary thing that drives you, your compass, if you will. And there's one that, and there's like these assistants, if you will. My primary is control, and people have different ones. One is distinction. I need to feel different. One is, keeping the peace. You know, if you ever meet someone that's like, hates conflict, you know, that's their compass is like avoid conflict at all. Mine's control. And I answered every single customer service email in this business from day one up until August of 2022. And letting go of that was really hard for me, because I felt like I had every read of what was coming out of this community and I could triage it. And I took every email personally. I kicked so many people out of the league because I take stuff personally. Someone comes at me and it's like, dude, you know, are you dumb? Like, why would you schedule us? And I'm like, you've been refunded, Jack. Go find a different league. Like, I just take everything personally. I'm not the guy that's like, oh, look, you know, I'm sorry. No, you talk rude. Goodbye. Take a hike. But I answered all the emails. Nevertheless, I learned the heartbeat of this culture and this community. And I knew I wanted to be in the way I, as a player, wanted to receive it, which was like totally transparent. Tell everybody everything. I tell everybody in this league everything that's going on. If we make a mistake, tell them everything that led up to that mistake. Don't just apologize. You know, I want everybody to trust this business. And giving that up, I thought that we were going to lose that a bit. I've never run a business this complex, this size before. And I did think that if I stepped out of some of these departments, that the wheels would fall off. But that's the beauty of growing a team that cares, is you can stay in it for a bit. And then you watch them like a squab, just to stay on the pigeon reference, learn how to fly. You know, it's like they understand what's important to you about customer service. They understand how you speak to the customer. They've been following you on this transition. Then you pass most of it to them and you watch them answer, have some of these interactions. It takes a little bit of time and then you say, I'm out of here. You guys have this. And the same with, I used to do every schedule. I used to oversee every single schedule. Now it's like, they've got the schedules. They're organizing the schedules. They know the important thing. I used to organize every free agent team, so the teams are balanced. So we don't just shove some people on one team, ship them, another team, ship them, look at their skill level, make sure it's like almost perfect so that when they take the field, it's a competitive game. It's not one's going to get run over because it's easier just to throw them all on a team and not worry about it. That's an easy thing for people to do. Any normal person would just do that, but the founders won't. So being in that process until you see them, until it becomes so easy for them that it's easier to do it that way than to do it what was previously the easier way. Then you step out of that. And so I've learned how to let go. And I remember there's a woman working for us, Grace. She's lovely. She now runs this operation called Women in Soccer in the US now. She was our GM for a bit. And I remember her seeing me struggle with it early on, the letting go part. And she was like, don't worry, you'll stop saying you can't let go. You will be able to do it. You know, if you keep saying it, you won't let go, but you'll be able to let go. You'll see, you know, you'll learn that. And I've learned it. And now I don't even stress out when things go wrong now, because it's like, I know our team is now grounded and figuring out how to fix that. So I know I could move to a different city and build a new league there and leave NYC footy pretty much in good hands right now. I feel we've gotten there. One thing that's unique though, is that pretty much everyone on the team plays in the league, and that's a competitive advantage, because when you are the customer, you want to make sure it's a good experience for yourself also. So you're really well grounded in, you know, what the league should feel like as a player. I want to highlight a couple of things I didn't share earlier, but I think speaks to mental health and these sorts of challenges. And I will try not to cry, because it brings me to tears like every single time. But
it'd make a great promo clip if you did. Just settle into it.
Sorry. It might. I do struggle to cry. I still don't think my daughter's even ever seen it, because it's like one of the things, it's like I don't know how to, I'll like tear up, but I don't really know how to. That's just pent up, like Bill Burr does the sketch, which like all that pain, I just shoved it into myself. Yeah. I related to that. So I was like, all of it. I shove it all right in here and it doesn't come out. I zip it up, never comes out. And that is me for sure. But I got
it's gonna come out on a 50-50 tackle on a Saturday afternoon.
Well, that isn't that the risk, because it when people shove it in here, yeah, you've got we sent it when we were doing little mini bios for the fashion show, because I walked out with this kid on. It was like, is Tarik a dick or is he nice? He's both, you know, who knows? Because some people can trigger, yeah, me, you know, if they're so rude and entitled, I'm like, that person thinks Tarik's an asshole. Anyone that has that personality definitely thinks I'm an asshole, because I let some of that pain come out. But anyone that's nice, they get this like super nice side of me. You know, I don't know. I'm very like a chameleon with that. If you're super nice to me, then gosh, I'm like overly nice to you. If you come at me, I don't care if you're an asshole, by the way, but if you are entitled and you misrepresent yourself, man, that's like tough for me. That's triggering for me. Anyway, and that's where the stomach cramming comes out, I think. But there's one week where we got three or four unsolicited messages from people just wanting to share what this league has done for them. And I'm only going to call up two of them. But one was a woman who said, hey, I just want to message you. COVID hits. I think she might have lost a family member. She gets diagnosed with breast cancer. She goes through like, you know, chemo, getting battered and beaten in this process of trying to reduce it, become cancer-free, becomes cancer-free at a cost to her body, and said she came out just feeling totally battered and broken, and someone recommended NYC Footy. And then she sent an email saying, I just want you to know that for the very first time in the past 3 years, I don't feel like a cancer patient, and it's because this league has brought me so much joy. And we highlighted her, this story. We asked her, would you be okay? Because I think this can be inspiring for other people going through something that you're having, that they might find this outlet through sport. And then the next email I got was, I am doing a good, so you might not get that edit, because I'm doing a pretty good job of keeping the tears at bay. But part of it is because now this person's become a friend of mine. But this father emailed me and said, hey, I want to just email you and let you know that I have an autistic son, and he loves soccer, and he graduated high school, and all the programs geared towards, you know, I think bringing autistic children or youth together for sport, like there was a league they played in, it's done. And so as a father, I didn't want to take soccer away from him, but there were no options. So I enrolled him in NYC Footy as a free agent, and it came with no small amount of stress. Because here I was as a father of an autistic child, and I need to let him go and be a free agent and an adult rec league. All of these people who don't know his backstory, don't know the context. He's, you know, he's physically perfectly functional. And, you know, he just he doesn't speak. I'll say that much. You know, it takes a decent amount to get words out of him. And he ends up playing this free agent team. And the dad writes me an email saying, I just want you to know that the team was so welcoming to my son. He ended up scoring a lot of goals and they won the title. And I was like, holy cow. He's like, I just want you to know that as his father, I've never seen him happier in his whole life than he is now. And on his off days, he takes pictures of his NYC footy jersey, you know, to just remind him of this thing that brings him so much joy. And this is the one that brings me tears every time, you know, and that's when I think that's my reflection for what's happening with the league. I think it doesn't come cerebrally. It comes from him here. It's like when that type of thing happens, that's when your heart is saying, like, look at what's happening here. Anyway, that fella's now on my soccer team. He's been for 2 years. So I've recruited him to my team. He does score a lot of goals and he's our penalty kick taker because he's a beast. And he's played in the top division with us as well. We moved him up. His dad was terrified. You know, I was like, bring him up. Let's, you know. And so those stories, I think, you know, God, it hits me hard. It really does. I think it's a joy, you know, to be able to share that story with you or anybody. But that's the story, going back to part two of the long time ago, that's the story the city doesn't know. That's the story that the politicians in this city don't know. They don't hear. They don't seem to want to ask questions. You know, how are people's lives impacted positively? What happens if you take that away from them? What if you take that field away from us that, you know, Max plays on? What if you take that field away that Diane plays on? You know, so that's what I'm working on, how to get those stories out there. And you'll see more and more of those in our Instagram feed, you know, over time.
Both beautiful accounts. And yeah, they speak perfectly to the impact that you're having. And I mean, it just must make your own chest pains that much more tolerable, knowing that you're out there providing that for people, right?
No question. I guess if I go early and this is what you bring to people, then I'm fine.
Legacy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing, mate. I remember when we spoke before for the magazine, there was a little part of me that was gutted. There wasn't a podcast to share the conversation on. So I feel very, very privileged that we've been able to have another one. And it's been equally as insightful and even on a personal note, quite helpful for me. So yeah, thanks, mate. I really appreciate you sparing the time and sharing what you have. And it's great to see what looks like unstoppable journey of footy.
We'll see where it ends up, but same with you. I mean, just the progress, where you've gone, you know, I hope you take time to reflect on these sort of milestone moments that you've had in your career, and then what you've spun out of that, another one, and now you're building out the podcast, and you show up and you're committed. And I think that's important. And I guess I'll maybe end on this for any listeners. I have a nephew who's trying to make it in music, and he gets disheartened easily, goes to a show to perform and no one's there, so then he doesn't go back. And it's like, you know, you got to show up even when nobody's there. And my wife even had, like, she was doing an Ayurvedic thing, this group invited her in, and she's like, no one registered, you got to show up even if no one's there. You got to show up. Think about all the comedians out there. They all showed up when no one was there. They all showed up when no one was there to laugh. They all showed up when people weren't laughing, let alone when no one was even there to laugh. They showed up because you just keep showing up. You show up. And if you can, like, really embrace that, it's like, I'm going to show up even if no one's there. I'm going to feel even better about myself. I went and I performed and not a single person was there. And I felt fine because I know that that is one really important step on the path towards doing what you love. So I'll leave anyone that's thinking about that, you know, that I think is very important to just tattoo it on in your brain. Just show up even if no one's there.
Yeah, it's the perfect way to wrap this in a bow, mate. I really appreciate that. And
you got it.
I'll let you crack on with your day over there.
I enjoy this a lot. You've given me some good energy to carry on.
You too, mate. Yeah, right back at you.
Awesome.
Speak to you soon.
speak to you soon. Ciao, ciao.
Bye-bye. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. Don't forget to hit the follow button, and I'll see you next time.